This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. As the clock ticks towards the loss of 21 soccer fields on airport land, the debate about what to do intensifies.
The potential is endless to what we can do with that complex if given the opportunity.
We need fields. We need land. We don't need a $17 million complex.
GLT correspondent Colleen Reynolds talks with the players in this community discussion, some for and some against a multi-million dollar multi-sports complex. Unit 5 Superintendent Mark Daniel is accepting praise from the governor for dual credit programs, but says the district would have been doing it anyway. Charlie Schlenker has another in our regular interviews with school superintendents. And discover why you should never play dodgeball with a softball pitcher. All of that, plus a GLT News update on the way. It's February 20th, 2017. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from the Jack Batal Real Estate Group. More information at jackknowshomes.com. This is GLT.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. By the end of the year, 21 soccer fields on airport-owned land along Ireland Grove Road will be off-limits due to FAA regulations, and so the debate is now ramping up about whether to seize the opportunity and go big, as in a multi-sports complex in one location, or to update existing fields and green spaces at schools and parks to fill the void. WGLT's Colleen Reynolds explores the options being kicked around.
You might not realize it, but soccer is the most popular sport played by all ages in Bloomington Normal. There are adult parks and rec teams, youth teams, travel teams, high school and college teams, plus indoor soccer played by kids and adults at places like Game Time Gym. It's a big business, and this soccer mom thinks Bloomington Normal is leaving money on the table. Fusion Travel Club soccer president Barbara Sager points out soccer is a recession-proof sport.
People will go to tournaments and pay money to go to tournaments in lieu of a vacation for their family. In May, we'll expect another 3,000 to 5,000 people to come in. We can bring the revenue for the city if a complex is built.
Fusion Soccer Club plays on community fields, which has no lights, no water, and no amenities. Sager says because of that, Fusion hosts only one tournament a year.
We are only allowed to do one because of sharing the fields right now with PCSL. We just don't have the time or the daylight because there's no lights out there to afford to do any more. Would the need be out there? Absolutely, without question. We just don't have the facilities to do that.
Sager mentions PCSL. That's Prairie City Soccer League, which has more than 100 teams for kids in kindergarten through high school. Last fall, there were 225 kids on a waiting list. Fusion, PCSL, and Bloomington High School all use community fields located near the north-south runway at this Central Illinois Regional Airport. It's estimated as many as 3,000 families could be affected by the loss of those fields. PCSL President Frank Schuler says, while looking for a solution, why not think towards the future and consider a bigger complex to accommodate other sports that are growing in popularity?
Also include those folks out there from rugby to lacrosse that can bring an economic impact into this community other than soccer. So they're looking for places to play just as much as we're going to be looking for a place to play.
Enter the Bloomington Normal Convention and Visitors Bureau and its Sports Commission, which last June gathered a group of 14 stakeholders, which it lists as supporting a multi-sport complex, including Illinois Wesleyan and Illinois State Universities, the Illinois High School Association, the Central Illinois Cricket Association, Special Olympics, and rugby and lacrosse teams, among others. Matt Hawkins of the Sports Commission says a 209 feasibility study for the town of Normal and the Sports Commission found a $16 million facility with 25 fields could generate a minimum of $10 million a year in business for area hotels, restaurants, and other shops.
It's going to generate a significant economic impact for years to come, and we think that the eventual return would justify what the city and town potentially could put into the project.
Hawkins says it would be a mix of financing, a public-private partnership that could include a 1% increase in the hotel-motel tax to generate an estimated $300,000 a year. He says that would keep the Twin Cities rate below other central Illinois cities. Hawkins says he will know more about financing needed when Bloomington-based developer Dave Stark presents his plans for 200 acres north of the Crossroads Center, east of Wiley Drive and College Avenue. Stark has hired the Kim Group, a Peoria-based real estate company, to assess community needs and come up with a design to present to both Bloomington and Normal councils as early as next month. Stark's proposal is for the same land north of the Crossroads Center that was part of a failed project proposed by developer Jeff Tinnervin and businessman Dave Majors. That plan topped out at $34 million. It also included a community center for the YMCA, Boys and Girls Club, and other groups located along South Main Street in Bloomington in the former Great Escape Building. 2 years ago, the Bloomington Council rejected the idea of using part of a 1% sales tax hike for that development. Katie Kim says the presentation from Tinnervin and Majors lacked critical information about the economic impact.
The presentation that I saw was missing some data that I think would have been very critical and important to express to the community as to what this would bring.
The 2009 feasibility study came up with economic impact by looking at similar multi-sport complexes in Kansas, Iowa, and Missouri, and a variety of demographic and income trends in the Twin Cities. As for the design of the complex, Kim says it could be phased in, with outdoor fields built first, followed later by a building for indoor sports such as basketball, football, and cricket. And she's not worried about what some have observed as less than suitable topography, specifically sloping ground.
We're looking at the topography when we're laying out the fields and also laying out buildings to make sure that we're making the most efficient use of the current land and layout, and so it's cost effective.
I'm not anxious to see city and town investment in this.
District 87 Superintendent Barry Riley. The district's Bloomington High School soccer team practices on community fields because grass on the football field at BHS can't stand up to the abuse. Riley would rather see money spent on laying AstroTurf on fields at Bloomington High School, Normal Community, Normal West, even Central Catholic.
We have a lot of maintenance that goes on in the natural turf field, and there's not a lot of hours that kids get to be on it. In this case, if you put turf on there, they could get a lot more out of it, and we can open that up to the community much more than we do today.
Riley has identified 57 green spaces throughout Bloomington Normal that could be used if enhanced for player practice. He says half of them already have some ability to play. He thinks putting money into schools is a much better approach to economic development.
People come into town when potential employers come in and see our schools. They, you know, it says something. It leaves an impression on them. And I want nothing more than to have them, when they drive out of here, say, wow, they really pay attention to their schools.
Riley also believes if any new tax revenue is spent, it needs to go to mental health services beyond what's already been earmarked, because he thinks that might not be enough.
We really need to take care of these services for members of our community.
There is one soccer organization that tends to agree with Riley. Millennium Youth Soccer was created in 2014 by parents of PCSL kids who weren't getting any playing time. Fernando Cornejo and his two brothers started Millennium. His father, one of the founders of PCSL, still coaches today. The club has 160 kids playing on 4 acres next to Good Shepherd Lutheran Church along Stride Drive, south of Oakland Avenue. Cornejo says volunteer labor and donations are what make it work. But the club is growing and has been looking for and fundraising for additional land.
It would allow us to grow and expand as a club. Probably the biggest concern is the tax increase, and which we're not in favor of. There are a lot of great companies within this community that we feel could help, but I don't think all the stakeholders have been at the table.
What is the political will for using tax money to support a multi-field, multi-sport complex? Municipal election forums seem centered on needs versus wants, and some citizens point to the pony leagues as an example of how to fill the need for more soccer fields. In 1988, it was a private effort by parents who paid to develop baseball fields because their kids wanted to play. PCSL President Frank Schuler says that's what parents did at community fields.
We built the fields. We put up the shed. We put in the parking lot. Granted, not the best parking lot, but it's still a parking lot. Those were private funds. Those were funds by the league to build that facility. The investment that we've put into that facility since then, you know, that's money that's going to be potentially lost.
Shuler is also willing to put private money toward and fundraise for a multi-sport complex, but he says not until there's an actual proposal.
What target is there for us to hit from a fundraising perspective? When you go out to tell a story and you ask for money or to try and gather those funds, what is the story that we're going to tell? What is the story that we are shooting for? And that's the story that we don't have yet.
Kathleen Lawrence, whose daughter played club soccer and is now a scholarship player at Troy University in Alabama, is also the town council's rep on the Convention and Visitors Bureau and the Sports Commission. 2 years ago, Normal supported using 0.25% of a 1 cent sales tax increase for a soccer complex, but without Bloomington support, it died. However, Lawrence says soccer fields remain on the town's radar.
It is part of our master plan, and so we do continue to be interested. How it gets done, though, like I said, is still yet to be determined.
Lauren says there's an opportunity to collaborate and take advantage of Bloomington Normal's assets to host regional and national tournaments.
This is something that we have to continue to look at as an opportunity for our community to leverage the sports tourism dollars that could come into the community.
Bloomington Alderman Scott Black, who was against the Tinnervin Majors proposal, now sits as the city's rep on the Convention and Visitors Bureau Board. He thinks a collaborative effort might actually give Bloomington Normal, as he put it, the best bang for the buck. But he admits the political winds might not be blowing the right way toward a multi-sport complex.
Taxpayers are demanding less spending. They are demanding more collaboration. I think that we have an opportunity here for a public-private partnership. There's no proposal on the table just yet. You know, we haven't seen any of the final numbers. I'm advocating for take a look, get the feedback from the public, and make the best decision at that time.
Mayor Terry Renner says the city is in a better place financially than it was when the previous proposal using sales tax revenue was considered. He is open to working with the town of Normal to make something happen on the west side, but he recognizes the relationship between the two municipalities is still strained from previous sales tax discussions, which included, as he put it, a lot of miscommunication. Renner says he doesn't expect the council will take up the issue until after municipal elections in April. In the meantime, Alan Mitchell, who played PCSL and Fusion Soccer, is headed to college on a soccer scholarship. She says local leaders need to remember soccer is a low-cost sport that helps many kids from low-income families feel connected.
That is so important, I think, especially for like kids who don't have that good home life and don't have that security and safe place at home. Like, this gives them that.
The clock continues running down toward December 31st when the federal government's waiver of its runway protection rules expires. Airport authority leaders say another FAA waiver is not likely, and the only possibility of changing the agency's position is if organizers have a scheduled date for groundbreaking and financing in place for a complex somewhere else in the community. I'm Colleen Reynolds.
And I'm Mike McCurdy. This is Sound Ideas on GLT. Coming up, from soccer balls to dodgeball, find out why you should never play dodgeball with a softball player. GLT correspondent Ryan Denham talks with the pitcher and her dad, who posted a video that has now gone viral.
Support for GLT comes from Drake and Nancy at Zimmerman and Armstrong Investment Advisors, offering securities through First Allied Securities. Member FINRA SIPC, offering 26 years of experienced, reputable, and timely financial management with a contemporary, independent perspective. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
It's Sound Ideas. Governor Bruce Rauner visited Bloomington Normal the other week to praise Unit 5 and Heartland Community College for its dual credit program and for offering a computer science associate's degree for high school students. Unit 5 Superintendent Mark Daniel accepted the praise, but in this interview with GLT's Charlie Schlenker, Daniel was pointed in saying the so-called best practice is something Unit 5 has been doing for a while, and it didn't take an initiative from the governor to do it.
And I also wanted to emphasize, especially in the budget times that we are in currently with our state, that partnerships are critical if we're going to continue to expand programs, be on the cutting edge of services for our students and for our parents and families and our community. So that's just one of many partnerships that we have. I also look forward to the expansion of our junior-senior internship program, which really comes about because students truly have an idea of where their interests lie, and then they can explore those interests while still in high school. And then hopefully they make better choices upon what their next steps will be upon graduation. So looking forward to that expansion, hoping our community opens its arms to the students. And again, I see this more of a regional impact, not just a Unit 5 impact. So hoping other districts also are involved in that process.
How big is your internship program right now, and how much in the way of resources would it take to do what you told the governor and lieutenant governor you wanted to do, which is make an internship available to every high school student that wants one?
So I've seen programs where you do have certified vocational teachers in that area, and we do have those on staff. It's reallocating some resources, so you might have to add several teachers to support those types of programs. But again, those students are going from one subject area to a different subject area. So in Bloomington Normal, specifically Unit 5, I see this over, it may be a semester experience for one student. It may be a whole year experience for another student. Usually we try to cap those at about 60 to 70 students per teacher. So, you know, with 1,000 students, you can sort of do the math then. So it is a focus. But with that, I've seen some unbelievable things happen, i.e., with students, as we look at different pathways, i.e., engineering, for instance, I've seen students truly become aware of what engineering truly is, and then also what the demands of that course of study would be if they pursue it in their post-secondary college, say they go to University of Illinois. And that's what we're about. We're about connecting kids to their passion, their interests, opening those doors, and then leading them to the next step. And, you know, I'd love to see our remediation rates go down at the university level. In other words, I would love to see fewer and fewer of our students have to take basic English or basic math and at the college level, and they're doing it and receiving zero credit for it.
What is the remediation rate for Unit 5?
Well, we have those numbers through Heartland Community College. I couldn't quote those numbers exactly right now, but I have seen some of the data, and we are on we're seeing a downward trend. So part of what I also said the other day was we're working very closely with schools like Heartland to develop specific courses that students take in high school that then remediates them for the next level. So we prepared them, and Heartland accepts them.
Ballpark it, though. Is it a third, 20%?
I would say it's about 30. I'd say about 30% in that range.
Need
some form of remediation, be it in English or be it in mathematics. Now, that's through that particular college, and that is a specific group of students, cohort of students. If I look at the University of Illinois, I'd like to compare those two institutions. But again, the goal would be, why are we having remediated at all?
Right. In any internship program, it involves the community resources. They are not educators.
Correct.
How do you make it a meaningful, curricularly sound experience if you're going to expand it to a couple thousand kids?
Correct. That's an excellent point. First of all, you have to train students, educate students. What are the soft skills? How do you introduce yourself? How do you communicate? How do you have the eye contact? How are you on time, promptly? What's the proper attire? Those things that most of our business community would say, those are critical, and we need to enhance those skills. So you usually have 2 weeks where you do this process of, or you have a process where you're introducing the soft skills. And then those students then start to enter, and I'll just use education. So say we had a senior that was interested in elementary ed. Now they go into a classroom, and they're literally working with the teacher, and we want to have some type of culminating project. So, and usually those projects then are based on what is the employer's need, or in this case, the teacher's need. It could be in an architectural firm. What's in a particular software? Maybe they're working on a particular project. How can that student be part of it? And I have seen students who have been a full year in an architect firm, leaving that with so much more experience and understanding architecture so much better than what they had originally envisioned it to be. And the key thing here, too, is we have a teacher who's constantly monitoring those students. So an employer never has to worry about negative issues with that particular student. They may exist, but we do the confrontation, we do the counseling, and we make that a learning experience for the student.
If you have a couple thousand students getting internships, you are talking more than 20 teachers, though, to supervise them. That's a lot in today's environment.
Yeah, that would be huge. And I don't see that. I see that probably be cut in half would be the best case scenario, because, again, they may take one semester. So now you've got it down to roughly half that.
So there are limits.
Yeah. Okay. But I would say, I mean, we already have students out there right now. This has been our pilot year, and we're learning. We're learning what sites are have the open arms, and we're also learning from our students what are things we can do better to prepare them. I've seen in some places where we actually start this process in their 9th grade, 10th grade years, and we'd have in-school internships. So, which then you had, instead of study halls, students could flow into various areas in the various classrooms and work with teachers.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Mark Daniel, the superintendent of Unit 5 Schools, joins us periodically for a chat about issues in education. So is this a 5-year program for you? Is it try it and see how fast it grows with some sort of diffuse expectation, or what are your benchmarks?
You know, I would love to see this, and we're taking it where it's not a requirement. It's an elective course. You know, ideally, the goal would be every student has this experience. Do we lock that into a graduation requirement? Well, that would take board policy and so on and so forth. I would like to be more of, this is something the students value, and they will pursue it. I think you have a better experience that way, and you enter that partnership with a bit of a better attitude as well. I'm interested in law. I'm interested in broadcasting. I'm interested, and I want to know more about that. So ideally, I would love to see in 5 years, 50% of our seniors graduate. Now, whether they do it one semester of their junior year or one semester of their senior year, somewhere along the line, they have that kind of experience.
You mentioned a hope for regionality, that other school districts would do similar things. What does that gain Unit 5 if everybody is doing it in the community or in the region?
Well, again, I go back to public education, and it's about benefiting the whole community. So as we look at better connecting our students to perhaps jobs that are available and high-demand jobs with future high salaries, that's the ideal situation as well. And if it's good for a Unit 5 student, it should be good for District 87 or a Leroy or U-High student, whatever. And we've been working together through the Be an Advantage and the Chamber, as well as the Economic Development Council, the EDC, working on this reality. So we're moving forward, and I'm seeing things align much faster than I've seen in other communities where I've been a part of.
How long has it taken there?
It took us about, the first semester we started it, we probably had maybe 15 to 20 students. By the time I left that particular school, which was about 8 years after, we had probably about 80% of our, but we were a small school. But I'll tell you, it went from our high school to four other high schools in our district, and it did catch fire throughout the Fort Wayne community area. So and if you know a little bit about Fort Wayne, the city of Fort Wayne, that area, it's maybe about, I'd say maybe a couple times the size of Bloomington Normal. And it was a critical link because we're also linking with our higher ed partners. So, but we already have that relationship here. Again, that's one of the assets we have in our Bloomington Normal community, where students can take that dual credit, align to perhaps their career interests, part of their junior, senior year. Didn't have that at first in Fort Wayne, and surely not at the level that we have it here. As you heard, the one student, former student, 2016 grad, I believe she had 20 plus credit hours.
She knocked a full year off her associates.
Yeah, full year off her associates.
By taking dual credit courses in high school.
Yeah, I want to say it was like 29 hours or something to that effect. So those are right now outliers. But what if that was no longer the outlier? What was that? What if that was the constant? I think we would have more and more businesses that would say, look at the talent pool here in Bloomington Normal. What about investing our dollars here in Bloomington Normal to grow our economy?
Which brings us to brain drain. A lot has been made about high school students going out of state in Illinois and then not returning.
Yes.
Does the departure rate from a given community change if there are high school level internship programs? Do those kids come back to places that they interned at when they were in high school after college at a greater rate than just those go away to college?
We were starting to examine data and make those correlations to see if there was any significance to the partnerships and the internship programs. I can tell you from the partnership I had with one of the local hospitals that they were in a nursing shortage. And because of their nursing shortage, they were very interested in facilitating students with a high capacity and a high passion desire to move into an RN. But the problem in the post-secondary world was there weren't enough instructors. So there are limited spots in the schools of nursing, both at IPFW or at St. Francis there in Fort Wayne. So they truly wanted students that, again, that were more likely to finish the program. So we worked hand in hand with one of the local hospitals. And I can tell you that from his standpoint, the CEO of that hospital, he said, we are definitely making headway in reducing the lack of nurses. So I think it does work, and now's the golden time to do that when the students are still very interested in making those connections and saying, wow, make an investment in me, and I will stay.
Unit 5 Superintendent Mark Daniel spoke with GLT's Charlie Schlenker. Educators from Bloomington Normal Schools have an organization in their corner to help them strive for new and innovative ways to help their students learn. Laura Kennedy has more during Sound Ideas in this edition of the GLT Datebook.
Beyond the Books Educational Foundation has for a quarter of a century been providing grants to local educators from both Twin Cities school districts in order to bring projects to their students. Foundation board member Rhonda Massey says they'll be marking that anniversary with an event dubbed Celebrate Learning, Saturday, February 25th, from 1 to 4 p.m. at Evans Junior High School in Bloomington. Foundation president Vicki Robertson says the event will help spotlight the projects that the educators undertake, which are very original and innovative.
Things that go beyond the scope, thus beyond the books, beyond the scope of what they have the funds for to do in their classrooms. And so innovative is the key word there, actually.
All right. Give me some examples of some innovative work that's been done.
We've had some really interesting projects, and Rhonda's here with me today, and she's newer to the board, so she's gotten to see that as well. And I often go out and take photos of different things that are going on, so I've gotten to see a lot of what the money has actually gone for in the schools. Some of the interesting ones that we've had, and when we say innovative, it's something such as a mobile museum project, where they're actually recreating museum masterpieces and framing them and taking them out to some of the other schools so the other kids in elementary school, junior high can see some of these masterpieces, and it's incredible how well that they have reproduced those. That's been something.
There are three grant categories. So there's a mini grant that goes up to $400. There's a standard grant that goes up to $5,000. And then once a year, there is one Beyond the Box grant, and that's a $10,000 grant. So I've only been through one cycle of reading grants, and one of my favorite ones last year was a weather station for kindergartners, and it was only, I think, $178. But I just thought that it sounded great, the things that they were going to do with this little weather station with these five-year-olds.
Right.
For them, I think that was innovative.
Innovative, yeah. Right. So it's those kind of projects that may be just something a little bit out of the norm, but we have so many great educators out there who are working to find different ways to teach their kids and make them excited about learning, and that was a prime example. We've had a lot of things with elementary kids, a couple grants where they're actually making science videos, and so then they share them with the other classes as well. So if you can imagine how much fun that is. And because they're doing it, they're learning the science theories as well. At the same time, we've had greenhouse projects, a lot of butterfly gardens, not a lot. That's, you know, something that has been popular as well. One of the ones that I was particularly partial to was a water quality grant where they studied the water table, the water quality, that kind of thing. And then even probably my favorite in the past couple years has been a DNA project at one of the junior highs where they were studying the book Wonder. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Laura, but it's a young adult book that actually my book club read years ago about a child in school with facial deformities. And it talks a lot about DNA in that book as well. So they did kind of a cross-curricular program where they studied that book and the science behind it, the DNA and what forms the anomalies in your DNA and what makes people have cancer and that kind of thing. So it's really been eye-opening to see some of the different things that people have done in the past years. Last year we had the Beyond the Box that Rhonda mentioned is in conjunction with the Shirk family, and they provide the funds for that particular grant. Last year that was a STEM project where it was reading and science, and they just had the author, Joelle Charbonneau, at
just last weekend
at BHS, and so they did projects related to that. And at Evans Junior High, where our upcoming event is going to occur, there's a rock climbing wall, and that was one of our Beyond the Box grants with the Shirk family as well. So it's not just a rock climbing wall that's, oh, great, we have a rock climbing wall at junior high. It's so much fun. The part of the grant that was also interesting was that they were actually teaching the kids how to train other kids. So it was more of a leadership lesson as well in conjunction with that. So even if it seems like something kind of basic, they expand it and use it for other methods to teach the kids as well.
How are you guys funded?
Well, we are an endowment. So we are funded through our investments and how they do, but also from fundraising, of course, and people in the community. We just recently had a fundraising campaign, a letter that went out, and we were successful with that. This year we will have a fundraising event. We try to do that every few years as well. But it is an endowment. So the donation that you make to that goes into the endowment, and it keeps earning throughout the years. And our goal is sometime in the next, hopefully, 2 years to reach $1 million in that endowment. And we have a really great base of people who donate every year to the fund as well. Everything from, you know, somebody who's willing to give us $10 because they've seen what it's done in their school to we have a few business partners as well. So,
and I'll mention that a lot of the donations do come from members of the community, but everybody who works at Unified in District 87 is able to make a payroll deduction to the foundation. And is it half of all of those funds automatically go back to be grant funded the next year?
Well, let's talk about your relationship between Beyond the Books and the school districts, between 87 and Unit 5. Tell me about that relationship.
Well, it's been a great relationship. We have nothing but the utmost support from them. We have somebody who sits on our board from each district. They're a great asset to have because when we need to get the word out about something, they get it to the schools very quickly. They also work directly with the teachers, so that's a great relationship to have, so one-on-one, that they can encourage the teachers to write these grants and remind them that it's not that hard. It just takes some time. So they really are our kind of our hands or our fingers out into the districts and let us know also what's working, what's not working, why teachers are writing grants or why they're not writing grants or what we could do better as far as our procedure to get more teachers to write grants. Since 1992, when this started, they have just been tremendous support because they know that they can see on a day-to-day basis what the money's doing. And it's exciting. The teachers get excited about these projects as well, I think.
Yeah, and the representatives do come to all our meetings. Yes. So they're really there for us.
And you're completely free of state funding.
Yes.
What a relief.
Yeah.
What a relief.
Well, and I think that brings up a good point. I mean, I won't get into the politics of anything. We stay completely away from that. But we all know that money is getting tighter and tighter. And I think it's the unknown that is the biggest problem. These teachers don't know what funds they'll have from time to time. So this really gives them an opportunity locally to work with an organization who is really enthusiastic about helping them do what they'd like to do. As far as writing the grants, we do have a rubric, is what we call it, which is basically a set of parameters and guidelines that they have to go through. And they get that. It's on our website. And they just have to fulfill some of those requirements or all of those requirements.
Now, you've been with the organization, Vicki, for a number of years. Rhonda, you've been with it, with Beyond the Books, for 18 months now. Why did you want to be a part of Beyond the Books?
You know, you hear teachers going out and spending their own money to buy Kleenex for their classroom or markers for their classroom, and I really don't think that that's fair for them to have to do. And that would really, when they, you know, I see this April, is her name Sherman?
Oh, uh-huh.
She does these great robotics programs, you know, and they're coding, and she would not, I don't think she would be able to do those without the funding of Beyond the Books.
Vicki, why did you want to get involved in Beyond the Books?
I was involved with my kids in their school years, not to the point that some people are, but I did try to do a lot. And I just really like the mission. It's really hard not to like an organization who's given money to teachers.
Right.
I mean, it's not an unpopular thing, so it was very easy to talk it up.
So you're celebrating 25 years here in the Twin Cities, and you have an event coming up called Celebrate Learning. It's your 25th anniversary celebration, Saturday, February 25th, from 1 to 4 p.m. That's going to be at Evans Junior High School. You specifically chose Evans for a good reason.
We did. Rhonda, do you want to tell them why we picked Evans?
We picked Evans because the rock climbing wall that Beyond the Books funded in 2014 is at Evans Junior High. So it will be incorporated into the day's activities. It's a free day of family fun. So we hope to bring a lot of families out. There will be a lot of activities that day. One of the things I'm most excited about is that 32 teachers are coming to set up their grant-funded projects and show people what kinds of things Beyond the Books has been funding. Since 1992, we've funded 725 projects at a cost of $550,000.
That's really what started the whole idea of having this family event, is we wanted a way so that the teachers, the educators in those districts could show off what they had been doing with that money. So we'll have probably Ozobots, which are little robots. We'll have reading tables. We'll have all kinds of activities that the different teachers have done. And there'll be crafts as well that we'll have, and a magician So it's just
you'll also have Miller Park Zoo animals.
Yes, we do not know what animals are coming or if they will be fuzzy or non-fuzzy animal
or insecty
right.
or reptile.
Right. But those are always popular, and we're really happy that they're going to come out and support us as well. The teachers are the focus, but there'll be other fun events as well. And we would like to say that we are partially funded by State Farm. They have given us a grant to help us with our 25th. Anniversary celebrations. There will be this one, and then there'll be one in October that we plan on having as well.
So. And the one in October will be a fundraiser, where this is just a free come out and have some fun.
So what's up for the next 25 years? Any grand plans in mind?
Well, we would like to try to achieve that $1 million mark at some point in our endowment. That's always in the back of our mind, I think. We have got some new corporate sponsors. Like I said, State Farm has helped us with this. We have another one that we'll be able to announce sometime after March that we're very excited about. That's probably one of our goals, is to get some businesses in the area maybe more involved.
I would agree with that.
Yeah,
that would be good to see.
Yeah, to get some more of the businesses in the area involved with us as well. We just really want to keep encouraging our local educators, because I know sometimes it's hard to stay encouraged. So we really want to help them out as much as we can. And really the kids, when you go out and you see some of these kids, you walk out and you're energized, and you are really happy that you're doing what you're doing with this foundation.
I would like to grow our name recognition also. I don't feel like a ton of people know what we're doing. And we do have a Facebook page, and I would encourage people to go out and like it. Mostly what we post there is, hey, your grants are due, or look at this grant in action. It's just cute pictures of kids doing things with Ozobots or...
Yeah. or anything. Yeah, it's been great. With the Facebook, Rhonda's helped us a lot with that, and we would like to get some more recognition. Because we have books in our title, a lot of people sometimes think we're library-related.
Right.
But it's beyond the books.
It is beyond the books, and that beyond is the key word, Laura. You've gotten it. That's what we've been trying to do. So, yes, we would like to have some more name recognition, and I think that is growing in the past 3 or 4 years. I think we've had more people. And, there are lots of ways to help us. We'd like to get some new faces helping us, whether it be on the board or donating. A reminder, too, that donation to Beyond the Books makes a wonderful honor or memorial gift for a teacher. If you had a teacher in your life that just made a big impact on your student, or if you have a family member in memoriam, it just is a great way, instead of, as Rhonda would say, giving another mug to a teacher, it's a great way to honor them. And we do send an acknowledgement to people to let them know that a donation has been made in their name. So we like to encourage that as well. It's for all ages. The Celebrate Learning on February 25th is for all ages. So there will be some activities there for probably up to junior high. Probably the younger kids will be the main target audience, but it's for everybody.
That's Vicki Robertson and Rhonda Massey from Beyond the Books Educational Foundation. Celebrate Learning is Saturday, February 25th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Evans Junior High School in Bloomington. I'm Laura Kennedy.
The deadline for submitting grant requests to the Beyond the Books Educational Foundation is March 6th.
Support for GLT Sound Ideas comes from the Jack Baytall Real Estate Group at Keller Williams, committed to helping you find the right match. Buying or selling your home can be easy. More information at jacksguarantee.com. This is GLT.
It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. A Central Illinois softball player is now a viral video star thanks to her videographer dad and a game of dodgeball. Millions of people have watched 15-year-old Addison Slayback from Hayworth use her underhanded softball pitching style to bean her two teammates during the dodgeball game at a recent practice. The video got picked up by ESPN and lots of other media outlets. GLT's Ryan Denham talks to Addison and her father, JJ, about their crazy week and their Bloomington Normal Girls Softball Association team, the Angels.
like everyone at school, they're like, oh my gosh, I know a famous person. And like, since today's my birthday or whatever, people keep like Snapchatting me and saying like, oh my gosh, I know a famous person and happy birthday. And like, and they keep like sharing my video with like, on the DMs of Instagram, and they're like, you're on this website, you're on this website, and it's just been crazy.
So Addison, why don't you describe the video to me like I've never seen it? What would I be looking at?
So there's two teams, obviously, dodgeball game, and I'm pitching the ball at like people, and he didn't start video recording until I hit like five other people, and I already hit him once, and then he's like, okay, I'm done with this.
I started recording. Yes.
Yeah. And then so I nailed like a couple of other girls, and then he started recording, and I just nailed the girl in the head from far away, and then the second girl I just nailed right in the gut. And I just kept, yeah.
You better say their names, because they're catching
Jen
a lot of
Kuhn,
stuff in
this. I nailed her in the head. And then Abby Knight, I nailed her in the gut. So.
And how are they, by the way? I assume they've been hospitalized or receiving medical treatment. They're okay?
Yeah,
they seem okay. They'll be at practice today.
Yeah.
JJ, what kind of media outlets have been sharing this video over the last few days?
ESPN, USA Today, Ellen Tube. Geez, there's just so many. Fox Sports, it was on Intentional Talk on MLB Network. It was on another show on ESPN. It's just been crazy. Everybody's been stealing it. It's gone as far as people have been copying my Facebook name just to get the video and putting up fake profiles. So there's a lot of danger in this that people don't actually recognize on something going viral.
So JJ, talk to me about the kind of the growth of the video and how it exploded over the course of the week.
Well, it started out, and you know, I have a few friends on Facebook. I probably have around 900 before all this started. And so I shared it on a Sunday night, and by the morning it was to 1,400 views on this. And I'm thinking, wow, I don't even have that many friends. This is getting good. So all I did was share it to like six Facebook pages or closed groups of softball. And what they did was share it outside of that. So by midday, it might have been about 177,000 views. So then everybody started sharing it. By the end of the week, right now it's at 2 million, and other websites or places on Facebook have stolen it, and they're getting millions of hits and millions. LAD Bible just this morning, 4 hours mm-hmm. ago, took it, and it has over 1.5 million in 4 hours. It's just been insane. It's unbelievable.
Wow, and so Dad, I assume you're the one behind the camera. I can kind of hear you giggling.
Yes, I was giggling. That's called my worst coaching moment. I mean, I'm supposed to be in charge of this practice, and the girls wanted to have some fun, so I said, "Yeah, you can play dodgeball." After getting hit in the face, I was like, "I'm just gonna record." And the funny thing about it, I only took one video. It was that 20-second clip. I knew when she hit Jen Kuhn in the face, I go, she needs one more, and I can put this on Facebook, and we'll get a few laughs from the friends. And then she hit Abby Knight in the gut, and I just pressed stop. We had what we needed.
Well, tell me, Addison, about the Angels. So who are the Angels? What is the softball team?
It's BNGSA, which is Bloomington Normal Girls Softball Association, and it's an A travel team, and the girls come over from, like a lot of places. Like some girls have to travel like an hour and 30 minutes just to come to a practice.
So tell me about your pitching style. I guess how fast is your fastball that we saw in the video there?
I'm not sure how fast that one is, but like when I'm actually pitching a softball, my fastest is 60 mile per hour. So it was probably, I don't know, really fast.
Gotcha. So, Addison, what do the other girls on the team say to you, basically, over the past week as this thing has kind of taken off and
yeah.
Footage of them getting hit with a dodgeball is all over the internet?
Yeah, they're just really like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this is, like, famous, and it's just crazy. And Jen, the one that got hit in the face, she kind of made a funny comment. She's like, yeah, well, I'm the one who helped you get famous because I'm the one who hit her in the face. Yeah.
What struck me about it is how accurate you are. Like, Like, you hit them square in the head and the stomach.
Well, I have to give someone credit for this because they used to play dodgeball in junior high. And the guy I coached with, Lyndon Jason, in Hayworth basketball, and he's the PE teacher for her. Yeah, and this was probably, I don't know, fifth grade, sixth grade. He said, Addison, why can't you just throw it like you pitch
underhand.
It? Ever since she's done that, she's been
taking kids out. Just whipping kids in PE. And, like, this past Friday, we got to play dodgeball because it's always, like, Friday you play dodgeball in PE. And all the kids were gunning for me and all trying to get me out just because of all this. So I was like, come on. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That's Addison Slaybeck and her father, J.J. Slaybeck, the star and creator of a viral video this week of Addison throwing a dodgeball incredibly fast at some of her friends. I'm Ryan Denham.
You can watch Addison's video right now at WGLT.org. Also at our website, find the individual stories and interviews you heard today thanks to Colleen Reynolds, Charlie Schlenker, Laura Kennedy, and Ryan Denham. WGLT.org is the place to find the full show podcast and to get started sending us some feedback on sound ideas. You can also post to Facebook.com/WGLTFM. You can email us at news@WGLT.org or tweet, use the hashtag sound ideas. I'm at Mike McCurdy. We're all at WGLT News. This is 89.1 WGLT Normal and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.